This is Capital Chat. This is Jeff Shapiro, politics columnist for the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Here today, we're talking about gambling and Virginia rolling the dice and how big will the payoff be. 3 points we'll be addressing: money, the regulation of the gambling industry and how that will affect how much money it produces and how much money the state collects, and the legislative debate that will affect both Graham Mumma, Michael Martz. What are the options available now for Virginians interested in wagering and maybe betting against the house?
Well, the big one is horse racing. The big new option is horse racing. We've had the Virginia Lottery for many years, but the Colonial Downs horse racing track was bought recently by a out-of-state venture. A lot of people with casino industry experience, and they are in the process of setting up this new sort of gaming enterprise in the state called Rosie's Gaming Emporium. The highlight of those facilities is what's called historical horse racing machines. They pretty much look and feel like slot machines, but they are connected to an archive of past horse races. So it's not, the players aren't really betting against the house. It's kind of functions under the same sort of pool system in live horse racing, where it's all the money goes into a pot and they hit the jackpot. That's really the main state-sanctioned gambling enterprise that is getting up and running now. There's also what's called skill machines that have popped up in sports bars and convenience stores all over the place, and those kind of operate in more of a legal gray area. There's no specific bill that says these games are okay. The companies behind these machines, they make the argument that it's not based purely on chance. You know, it's kind of a tic-tac-toe style grid that the player is presented with, and the player just has to sort of connect three symbols. But there is obviously a big element of luck in how the symbols are going to pop up on the screen.
The other option is sports wagering. It happens all the time casually now. People play March Madness pools and NFL fantasy football leagues, and they put money on it. But the Supreme Court ruled last year, I believe, that states can allow sports gaming or gambling. The gamblers prefer the word gaming, I gather.
And Virginia has taken steps early in that.
So I think whatever the omnibus legislation that emerges from the General Assembly next year, dealing with casinos, skill games, the whole gamut of options, is going to also include sports wagering. And right now the inclination is to leave that potentially profitable enterprise to, guess what, the Virginia Lottery. That's called trusting Lady Luck.
Yeah, Virginia was one of the first states to sort of sanction and regulate daily fantasy sports games. And that's not just betting on the outcome. That's kind of, you set your lineup of players, and depending on the performance of, you know, 8 or 10 individual people, you might win some money. So I think that's also kind of seen as more in the skill realm than just blind luck. And I think that's why that was kind of one of the early things that the General Assembly said it was okay with.
Parimutuel was approved in Virginia in 1988 by referendum. The lottery,
right,
the previous year. The horse racing industry did not do well in this state, despite the state's, you know, long horse racing tradition, largely because of what was going on in the gambling industry.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot more money made, and a much larger audience drawn to casinos and whatnot. And now, of course, they're all competing. All those gambling interests are now competing with the web. But one of the things that's come up, Michael and Graham, and as we've seen local prosecutors in Charlottesville and now Danville ask aloud whether some of these so-called skills games that are popping up, whether that constitutes a breach of Virginia law. You talked about the gray areas.
Right. The Commonwealth's attorney in Charlottesville, Joe Platania, so far he's the only person who has come out and said flatly that he thinks these games are illegal, that they are, you know, close enough to slot machines that they represent illegal gambling devices. And he, I think it was in June, he, you know, made a public statement saying he had determined they were illegal, and he ordered them to be removed from city establishments, said he would prosecute any establishment that continued to host them, made clear he wasn't going to go after the person sitting at the machine pushing the button. He was going to go after the business that was putting this out there as an option for their patrons. So he so far is the only person who has really come out and taken a strong stand against these machines. And I think his action was driven in part by, you know, public concern in Charlottesville. Someone raised the concern at a city council meeting and said, why are all these slot machines showing up in our town? the main company that was operating the machines in Charlottesville, a company called Queen of Virginia, they have since sued the Charlottesville Commonwealth's attorney in a civil case. And that case may be the thing that shines some legal clarity on the situation that, you know, a judge could potentially rule, issue a ruling on whether these games are games of skill or games of chance. The Attorney General, Mark Herring, has so far declined to wade into that and issue a ruling himself or issue an opinion himself. He's kind of leaving it up to every city and county to make their own decision.
And this spotlights two issues, Michael. You know, how Virginia regulates these games, and what does all this mean as a potential revenue source for the state? And what might it mean for an existing source of revenue from gambling dollars, the lottery?
We don't really know how much money the state could earn from it. There's relatively small share of the purse, as it were, for the state from these Rosie's operations. That's going to be an issue in January. What's the state's take? We don't know about casinos at all because right now they're still illegal. The games of skill, there's no take because they're operating, as they say, legally. The Charlottesville prosecutors has begged otherwise. I think the big issue for the state is not only how much money they can make, but how much they could lose. The state lottery, Kevin Hall, the lottery director, no stranger to the Capitol Square, he raised the flag with Aubrey Lane, Secretary of Finance, who in turn broached it publicly at a joint meeting of the House Appropriations and Senate Finance Committees last month, saying that the lottery had a boffo business in the last fiscal year, some $650 million, I think, going ostensibly to education. That's another argument. But toward the end, the sales were softening, and they believed it was because of competition from not only Rosie's Emporiums, which had state permission to operate, but also Queen of Virginia and these other so-called skill games, which say they won't need the state's permission. So that's why they haven't done it. Now, those guys are quickly falling in to say, well, we're willing to be regulated. We're willing to help pay something toward the state. Part of that is competitive, too, because they say there's some other companies that are out there that are operating even further under the radar. They at least went to prosecutors and sheriffs and police chiefs around the state and said, this is what we're going to do. Speak now or forever hold your peace. They thought they had the game pretty well fixed in Charlottesville, and that changed on them.
Graham, you were at a news conference the other day organized by the horse racing people. They said a lot. Maybe some of the news was what they didn't say.
Yeah, the purpose of this press conference they had the other day at the Virginia Tourism offices was just kind of to tout the return of live horse racing, live thoroughbred horse racing in Virginia. They just finished their inaugural horse racing schedule at the track out in New Kent County, and they wanted to, you know, talk this up as a big economic win for the state and talk about how many people it brought in, talk about, you know, it's a good thing for horse trainers, horse owners, all the agricultural industries that support horse racing or are tied to horse racing. But there wasn't a whole lot of discussion of the historical horse racing machines, the gaming machines that are kind of the financial underpinning of the entire operation. There were a lot of top Colonial Downs brass in the room, but they apparently left the event before they opened the floor to questions from reporters. So I had some questions about the historical horse racing machines, but they were not around to answer them.
Michael, the industry is anticipating making a big push in January when a new legislature will be installed, perhaps a divided legislature, perhaps a Republican legislature, perhaps a Democratic legislature. The industry clearly is interested in minimum regulation and maximum profit. Can you talk a bit about the lobbying and PR push?
Susan Swecker, who's chair of the Virginia Democratic Party, she has a public affairs company, and one of her clients is Queen of Virginia. And she is part of a lobbying team that is fairly illustrious. That includes Tom Lisk, a veteran industry liquor and hospitality industry lobbyist, David Halleck, who's a big Democratic operative, is close to Governor Ralph Northam, a couple of Republican-oriented lobbyists, Ken Hutchison and Andrew Lamar. And then presided over by legal mastermind Tony Troy, whom those of us in the press corps have long affectionately referred to as the Minister of Vice. And so that's a high-powered team, and they thought they had done their homework in advance, and then Platania's anticipated sudden opinion was about to pop up. They got wind of Tony Troy asked Susan Swecker to call some friends and see what she knew about him and what was going on. She did not call law enforcement. She called two legislators and a member of the city council and insists she was not lobbying. She's not a registered lobbyist. And unbeknownst to me, when I wrote the story, I was corrected on Twitter, rightly so, that it's against the law for a party chair to actually lobby. So, and that's part of it. But there aren't a lot of saints in this debate. Let's face it, the big stakes are going to be on casinos. I mean, we have an intense lobbying effort in Bristol, which desperately is looking for something for its economy. Very high-powered, and Graham knows more about the players in that one. But you also have the Pamunkeys, who are interested in a casino in Norfolk, which has four lobbyists, one of whom is married. Angie Bezik is married to the Senate Majority Leader, Tommy Norman, who's had a hand in crafting the legislative vehicle that was adopted this year to study all of these issues at the Joint Legislative Audit and Review Commission.
It was also instrumental, because it's in his district, in writing the legislation that allowed Colonial Downs to re-up.
That, too, cuts both ways. He was he was a little bit dismayed earlier this year with Colonial Downs because they were expanding beyond the footprint they'd agreed upon. They were trying to get – they have referendums. They're trying to in Dumfries and in Danville to try to set up their emporiums there and as a precursor potentially to casinos. And then, you know, the fight at JLARC initially was how big was the scope of this study going to be? Was it going to just look at sites in Norfolk, Chesapeake, I think, or Portsmouth, maybe Portsmouth, Richmond, Danville, and Bristol? Or would they look in Northern Virginia, where MGM International across the river in Maryland does not want a lot of competition, I'm told. And they, too, have lobbyists.
Right. Is represented, one of whom, I believe, is a former attorney general, Jerry Kilgore, who was a Republican nominee for governor in 2005. Graham, very quickly, and this is on the way out, in terms of the kind of political arithmetic on this, can you talk a bit about how the partisan makeup of this legislature post-November might affect the issue? I ask because among the things we've been hearing is that maybe liberal Democrats, should they be an abundant number in the legislature, should their party control the legislature in January, might be down on this largely because it's somehow seen as exploitive of the poor. So maybe you could talk about coalition politics.
Yeah, it's... partisanship has kind of gotten scrambled on this issue a little bit. I think a lot of Virginia's historical opposition to gambling and casinos comes from just, you know, it's in the old, like, vice law code section of the state code. It's just seen as something that's distasteful and, you know, gross.
In my backyard.
Right.
NIMBY.
And you've really seen, I think that drives a lot of the Republican opposition. House Speaker Kirk Cox is very much a gambling opponent. The religious sort of family values type of conservatives just think this is, you know, this is, gambling is bad. We don't want it in our state. And I think Democrats don't really buy, you know, the moral argument as much as, you know, conservatives, social conservatives do. But there is this idea that is kind of taking root among, progressives that, you know, this gambling is a predatory activity. You know, the companies are kind of targeting poor neighborhoods, and, you know, it's just a way to extract money from people who don't have much money to give. But I think attitudes toward this do seem to be kind of loosening on all sides. I think that's why you're seeing such a lobbying bonanza and so many bills and so many people coming forward trying to get a piece of it. I think Virginia is very much seen as an emerging market And a lot of what we're seeing is just everybody jockeying for a position, hoping that they can get the biggest piece of the pie.
Yeah, some of the moral objections, I think, were also part of the debate over the lottery 30 years ago. I remember quite vividly then-Governor Jerry Belisle did not personally favor the lottery for all those reasons. He thought it was predatory toward the poor.
An inappropriate function of
and
government.
And his position was that if we're going to allow it, then the money should be used – it'd be one-time money for one-time purposes, but that was the way it began. But it quickly changed under his successor Doug Wilder, who faced a recession, and then the money became part of the budget.
And of course, the approval of the lottery in 1987 augured the approval of the horse racing the second year. That was, of course, the second go for the horse racing industry because it had been rejected in referendum previously.
The one other point I would make about the partisan issue is when Graham was working on the Queen of Virginia story, he looked at the amount of money political contributions given on the VPAP website. At that point, it was like $324,000. More, and it was about half and half Republican and Democrat. And I think the top one was the Senate Republican caucus and Kirk Cox's Political Action Committee and Majority Leader Todd Gilbert and all the Democrats, too. And so it's interesting, after the story about Susan Swecker came out, I kind of expected some of the Republicans to try to pounce on it for political reasons, but didn't hear much, and I wonder why.
As you say, Michael, there are no saints in this story. It's a safe bet we're going to be focusing closely on this story in the year ahead. Special thanks to Graham Mumma and Michael Martz. This is Jeff Shapiro for Capital Chat. Join us again next week.